Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to have an hour of open lines for you, and I call them sound off open lines.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value. So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
And welcome to Sound Off Open Lines, the portion of Coast to Coast where we take your phone calls. It's interactive. Tom is also going to take your text and tweets, and we'll get that going, too. Let's pick it up by going to Jim in Indiana to get things started. Hello, Jim. Good morning.
How you doing?
All right. Good. Good, good, good. What's going on?
Had a UFO story and then also a night thing that happened to me a while ago. The UFO story was like about 30 years ago. And what I'd seen was three lights that were like red up in the sky. And what was weird about it is they were spinning and the circle was getting larger and then smaller. And it kept going in and out. And I didn't know if it was airplanes doing this or if it was actually, and I never thought it would be a UFO. I thought it'd be weird for somebody to be doing an air show in the middle of the night.
Sure was. Could it have been one big object with these three lights, or do you think they were three separate?
That's what I started to think after listening to your guys' show. And it might have just been one object with those lights moving in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it looked like it was up about where your small airplanes would fly.
And of course, no sound, right?
Yeah, no sound. I didn't hear anything.
Yep, that's what happens.
All right. And then I had my next story was, if I can get that in, is that cool?
Sure.
Okay. In the nighttime, this is a long time ago, I was about a year. I was a brand new born-again Christian. We had been out on outreaches, witnessing to people. And so the bedroom that I slept in, I was still at my mom's house. I always slept under the covers and because the room was cold. And so in the nighttime, I wake up out of nowhere, and what was weird is I was praying outright, loudly. And and then I noticed that there was something like on top of me, or it almost felt like it was inside my chest, like grabbing at, it felt like it was trying to squeeze my organs or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, it was that freaked me out. And so, because I was freaked out by it, I just kept, then I was fully awake. So now I kept the prayer going, and I just kept praying and praying. And I never lifted the covers off because I was kind of scared. And I just kept praying and prayed myself right back to sleep. And it seemed like it was whatever was on top of me was like there for like 15 or 20 minutes before it. And I might have been frozen too. I don't know when you guys talk about that.
That's sleep paralysis. Yeah, that happens.
Right. And then here's a kicker to this. I'm at work. It's one of the fellow messengers that I'm witnessing to him, and he becomes a what I call a born again Christian. And within a week of him becoming a born again Christian, he has the same thing happen to him.
Jeez.
But he doesn't know the Bible that well. The only thing he really knew was the Our Father. So he came up out of his sleep praying the Our Father and did the exact same thing.
Now, you didn't see anything holding you down, did you?
No, I didn't. I was too paranoid to pull the covers off. I just kept praying.
So it could have been, you. Had you pulled the covers down, you might have seen what was there.
Right, right. True.
It's called the old hag syndrome sometimes, which has got this wicked-looking old hag that holds people down. And as a matter of fact, they say when it happens when you're a child, you generally grow up to be a sickly kid. First-time caller Jason in St. Louis. Go Blues, Jason.
Hey, yeah, go Blues, man. Listen, I was just wanting to comment on the last episode you had with the woman there that was a psychic in her book, whatever. And you know, I didn't feel like she was really touching on the base that with exorcism and spirituality and ghosts. And, you know, the Catholic religion is the only religion that can release an exorcism. And she didn't really bring up St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Thomas Augustine. And it was a little bit disappointing to hear her kind of like just put a broad brush on other, you know, religions.
Well, what the Catholic Church has just done, though, Jason, is they've now opened up exorcisms to teach non-Catholics, which is pretty dramatic. They've never done that before.
That is dramatic, and it is kind of, it's faulty in itself, because you do need to have the purity to exercise an exorcism. And I've been to the Catholic Point up there in St. Louis when I went for Ameren, and I turned off some electric meters there.
Yeah.
And when you walk in, the front desk says, "Hey, don't go on the fourth floor."
Really?
And yes. And they also say, you know, we're doing construction in the catacombs, you know, because they were doing construction at the time.
Yeah.
And this was a few years back, but you know, they have catacombs in the basement and they're boarded up. And when I got to electric meters, you know, things were not right. And to put people in there, you know, and to put it on a table that it could possibly be of other religions that also have the ability to get rid of demons is to me, because I know Japan, I know Thailand, I know Philippines, I know Christianity, I know Catholicism, I know Lutheranism. I know all these little religions, and I know Hinduism, the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, okay, the Quran.
It sounds like you know your stuff.
And if you get into the depth of where demonic entities lie, they are there because you're not believing into Christ. You're not believing into the fact that God.
Well, are you saying, though, that you have to be a Catholic to be a good exorcist, or can you be a Christian?
I'm saying that the Catholicism Church is the only entity that can really release those demonic spirits.
Well, that's an interesting take. And what's fascinating about the entire Catholic Church is that it is the first religion that did exorcisms. No question about that. We take text and tweets. Tom, what do you have for us?
Oh, we do indeed. From Keith in Clearwater, Florida. I want to sound off about folks on the road that don't use blinkers. It drives me crazy.
It is, especially when you're behind them
and
they stop abruptly. I'll tell you one of my biggest pet peeves in driving, not just the people who don't flash.
It's good you're going to say this, because his last line is, "I'd like to hear a sound off from you."
Somebody just yesterday cut in front of me on the freeway, okay? On the freeway, people are doing 65 miles an hour. And because they could not get to the farther right lane, okay? They stop, or they go from 65 to 25. To me, that's stopping on the freeway. That is the worst thing to do. It's a way to cause a massive accident. You got people doing 65 miles an hour. I got people behind me doing 65 miles an hour. And this person comes to a crawl because they can't get to the right-hand side.
Right.
That drives me nuts.
The reason I chuckle is because for as long as I've known you, you're not a native here, but you've been here long enough and like things still like amaze you. Like you're not used to, I mean, people just drive like that.
There are bad drivers in every city.
That's true.
Wherever you go. But I've seen more in Los Angeles per capita.
Because they're here.
You have more drivers.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's frustrating. How about you? What's your biggest driving pet peeve?
Driving is when I'm going the legal speed limit and somebody honks to make me go faster.
And they get right up behind you?
Yeah, and I don't do this often, but I want to admit that I've done this, is they'll honk and it'll drive me crazy. I will put on my blinkers and take my foot off the pedal.
What do you mean? Oh, and just crawl?
I'll just let it crawl.
God. See, you could cause an accident.
No, though. No, I would never do it if it really could cause an accident.
Have you ever chased anybody in your life?
Come on.
Never?
I've been chased.
Have you?
Yeah. Crazy people. There's crazy people.
Well,
here.
I'm convinced road rage starts when a bad driver or rude driver does something to somebody who's having a so-so day or a bad day.
Well, yeah,
and then that person goes ballistic.
I had a guy walk up to my car and tweak my mirror because I wouldn't move my car.
He did it?
He did it.
Did you go nuts?
Yeah, it made me crazy.
All right. We'll get another text or tweet from you in the second half. Let's go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Hello there, Corny.
Hey, Georgie. How y'all are there?
We got your packet, by the way. And you must have spent $100 in postage to get that to us.
Well, Georgie, it was worth every penny. And look, y'all are great. Like I said, Columbus, I know Columbus, Ohio, and then you're going to Florida. So if y'all get to meet George and Tommy, y'all are really going to enjoy them. I wanted to thank a young lady that's out there named Ruth. I call her Ruth's Radio because she got me a radio.
She got you a Sea Crane radio, right?
Yes, and I listen to Coast because my old military police radio went out on me. But I wanted to tell a story about Memorial Day, George, if you don't mind.
No, go right ahead. By the way, we will have a program on Memorial Night. Go ahead, Courtney.
Well, anyway, the guy that was helping me, you know, and we don't know what our time is or anything. Like, he was a military police officer, too. He was in the local police department. He had found out that there were racists in the state police and our local police and the federal. And his name was J. Jeremy Carruth. He was a great military police officer. We served together in the 239th MP Company. And, Lord, I salute him. And, like I said, he died in a horrible, it was two officers, really. And this guy, he said he wasn't going to be taken alive, George. And when you go in on a frontal assault on anything, whether it's military or police work, you know, when you go in the front, more than likely you're going to die.
Yeah.
Because they're ready for you and stuff.
You're the first line of defense.
Yeah, and but like I said, he was helping me out so much, and I salute him. And, George, we need to pray and try to do something for Jefferson City, Missouri.
Oh, my God, they got blasted. Well, we were on the air last night. We had that story, and we didn't realize, you know, the extent of the damage other than it was catastrophic.
Yeah, I feel sorry. I looked at some of that stuff on the TV today, and it's just unbelievable. I've been in hurricanes and stuff, and I thought that was bad, but that tornado damage, it's really horrible. And like I said, I don't know if you've been there. I know you always say about St. Louis in that cave of yours, but have you ever been to Jefferson City?
Well, I sure have. That's the state capital.
Wow. But, George, like I said, I'm close to finding out something, and Tommy and y'all got the package in. You got the little, I think, a promotional thing. I'm just trying to show different things.
Now, that's our copy, though. That you don't need that back, right?
No. Everything I sent y'all is y'all.
Because it'll cost me $100 to send it back to you.
All right.
But let me ask you something. And because you're so public with this, I don't think you mind talking to us on the air about this. exactly what happened to you. You were a military police officer?
Okay, this is what happened to me, George. I was a military police officer in the 239th MP Company at Camp Beauregard.
What year?
Okay, from 79 to 94.
Okay.
I spent 15 years in. In 1990, I joined the Federal Bureau of Prisons as a correctional officer. I was still in the MPs up until 94.
Okay.
But in 99, we had an incident here in Alexandria where four white off-duty officers beat down this black fella. Well, I happen to know the black fella, and I just didn't believe they said he carjacked him and all like that. Well, I found out that that was a lie. They just made that up. But they came into town drunk, and they beat that poor fella up. But he beat them up pretty bad. Then a black state trooper, a Louisiana state trooper who was here for Mother's Day in 1999, May of 1999, which is 20 years ago now, he stopped and tried to stop the melee because he didn't know they were.
Yeah, he didn't know who they were. That's right.
So they arrested him, said he was interfering with a police officer, and arrested my friend saying that he was trying to carjack him. Eventually, they dropped the charges against the state police officer because they realized, oh, well, the state police is going to investigate us, and they'll find out the truth. So they hurried up and dropped the charges against that black state trooper. But they tried to keep the charges on him. And it,
all right. Now, how did that affect you?
Well, they had a public forum that the mayor wanted to see and if there were any problems with the police and all like that. And so I just spoke out because the police would call them to our neighborhood where I live at. It's all black. And they would never come. And when our neighbor's house got ransacked.
All right. But how did you, let's be specific here. How did you end up going to prison? What happened?
Okay. Well, that's what I was trying to say. So my agency, which is the Federal Bureau of Prisons, got mad at me for speaking out at that public forum.
All right.
So then they set up a thing where they were going to try to fire me. So the people found out that I was getting death threats and stuff like that. So they were secretly giving me, I've even got information from the FBI now.
Where all right. Well, look, Corny, you got to get to the point here for me, though.
Okay.
The point is what happened for them to put you in jail?
They said I threatened to kill the warden at work.
That's what they charged you with?
Yeah, but it was something I wrote, George. And I'm not going to lie to you. I can understand. But if you take everything that I've been through, nails in my tires and death threats, what I wrote was about me. It wasn't about the warden. And
well, why did you send it to him?
I didn't send it to him. I sent it to Washington, D.C., to the Federal Bureau of Prisons, the head office there, because
right.
I was tired. I got emails
So with that letter, they were able to convict you?
No. What I did, George, they put a piece of rope in my food, and I said, well, that I know they're going to try to do something to me. So I just gave up, George.
All right. We'll have to talk about this specifically more because I need to get to the bottom of just what you did, especially if we're going to try to get it to the president to see if we can get you a pardon. So Tom's got your number, of course, and we need to talk at length about that to be sure. We're going to continue more with Open Lines in a moment. Cornelius has been a great listener of Coast to Coast. We're trying to help him out, but we have to get it down to a specific on exactly what he did and why he went to jail on this. He is asking for, he's out of jail now, obviously. He's asking for a presidential pardon, and we just need a little more information from him. But we'll be back with the rest of your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with more Open Lines, and let's go to the phones. Let's go to JP in Livingston, Montana, to get us going. JP, welcome to the program.
Morning, George. How you doing?
I'm fine. Hope you are, too.
Well, I've got a UFO story for you, but if I can, first, I'd like to send all my prayers out to those Missouri residences that were affected.
You sure can. Thank you.
I was born in Missouri, so I know what a tornado looks and feels like.
Oh, you sure do. Whereabouts in Missouri were you born?
I was born in Kansas City, Missouri.
Uh-huh. Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great city.
Well, my UFO story, I was living near Pahrump, Nevada, back in early March.
Okay.
When I was camping out and near Death Valley Junction and noticed looking southwest, there was a light coming down looked like it was on approach for landing. Well, it wasn't blinking like a regular airplane would, so it caught my attention, and I looked, and it stopped in midair. And as I was looking at it, it was changing colors from red to blue to orange to white to green. Now, see, this is in an airplane. And it sat there for a few hours until the sun came up and then disappeared. Well, a few days later, I heard out of a Vegas news station that a helicopter, a medevac, saw the same thing.
Wow.
But through night vision glasses.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't heard anything about the incident since.
That's amazing. Were you ever close to Art's place?
No, I wasn't. I was maybe, 20, 25 miles from there. I was actually in Death Valley Junction.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the medevac was actually looking to the north, and I was looking to the south. So we saw the same thing, and I have this on video.
I've seen a couple of UFOs with night vision goggles years ago on the top of the roof of a hotel, and those things were making 90-degree turns, starting and stopping. Truly, truly remarkable. Next up, let's go to Florida, Navarre, Florida. Paul's with us east of the Rockies. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, great to speak with you, George.
Thank you, sir.
For many years, I've considered Coast to be the most mind-expanding experience I could do without taking anything. And I thank you for that.
It's a PhD in listening.
It is. And one of the mind-expanding things I did listening to Coast over the years is try to take all of the ufology facts and stories that were presented on the program and integrate them into a unified theory of ufology,
mm-hmm.
if you will. And it's taken quite a while, but I think I've done it, and I'd like to run it by you.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. Sure.
Okay, well, first off, grays and extraterrestrials and so forth are not grays. They're not extraterrestrials. They're time travelers. And the reason I say that is just purely on logic. We know from Einstein's theory of relativity that the time-space continuum allows the present, the past, and the future to exist at one and the same time, relatively speaking.
Are they us from the future?
They could be, or they could be an entirely different race after we go extinct. There's no telling because the timeline could be extremely long.
All right, but you think they're earthbound?
Correct, and the reason I think that is because all of the characteristics that the so-called extraterrestrials exhibit when they make contact with human beings. Well, one, they try to avoid contact with us. Why would they do that? Because they don't want to change anything about the present, because if they do that, it will change the future where they exist in unpredictable ways. Their vehicles are many different constructions and types, indicating that they're probably originated by people in many different periods of time ahead of us. Cattle mutilations, for example. We know from science that as a given organism progresses through its ecological lifespan, ambient radiation causes genetic mutations that result in the extinction of the organism. No organism lasts forever. Everything goes extinct. And we will do, too, because our chromosomes, as they're passed from person to person, are damaged by ambient radiation. And eventually the race dies out. Well, the people in the future are coming back and using kidnappings and cattle mutilations to obtain DNA from our age to rescue themselves from genetic doom. Yetis. Yetis are also from the future, according to my logical explanation.
That's interesting. So you don't think they're creatures that are already earthbound?
I'm talking about Yetis?
Yeah.
No, they're what they are individuals from the future who have come back to conduct their own personal exploration of our time, and perhaps to harvest some DNA personally by making off with somebody. The disappearances in the parks, for example, are and the tremendous physical ability that's exhibited by the beings that have made off of these people in the park system clearly indicate the superhuman strength that might be possible with genetic development of the human being in the future, many years in the future, perhaps hundreds of thousands of years in the future. What really sealed the deal for me on this whole theory and proved it to my satisfaction, to the extent I was willing to pass it by you, was over the weekend on one of the Coast programs, there was a couple that presented the results of their expeditions, I think in Oregon or Washington State, where they had found structures that were used by Sasquatches. And I had always believed that the Sasquatches were also time travelers, but in the absence of any direct evidence, that was just pure speculation. It's not speculation any longer, because what they've discovered is that these Sasquatches build lean-tos and very, very primitive shelters for overnight, very temporary, transient shelter. And here's the important thing. Okay, they use no tools, all natural brush, all bent twigs, no knives. So what we have here is somebody from the future who wants to change nothing in the present.
That's possible, but I've always thought that they were creatures that obviously were not discovered by science. But, you know, other people have said they're dimensional, that they're extraterrestrial. They could be all kinds of things. Final text and tweet from you, Tom. What do you have?
This one from Katrina in South Beach. I just heard the turtle story, and I want to know your favorite animal other than a dog and cat, or cat, and why.
Favorite animals other than a dog and cat.
Yeah, I can't choose them.
You mean like a pet?
She doesn't say. Just your favorite animal other than a dog or a cat.
Oh, gosh. You know what? I'd have to categorize it as pet, because favorite animals could be anything. I mean, I just think this planet has so many great species, whether a chimpanzee, a gorilla, a frog, all those things. I used to go down to a local creek and scoop up tadpoles. And you know what they are, Tom?
Of course I do.
Okay, what are they?
Minnows.
No, they're not minnows.
They're little frogs.
They're before they turn into a frog.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Little frogs.
It's the process of growing up.
Little frogs.
And they're the little swimmers. And I used to scoop them all up out of a pond and or a creek and then take them home and raise them. And most fascinating thing you have ever seen, because they just start with their heads are black and then they have a little tail. And then depending on what kind of frog it is, it could be a leopard frog or a bullfrog. There's a different size to the tadpole. But then after a while, their little feet start growing and their legs come out of their bodies.
So you'd keep them to like a full-grown frog?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden their tails start to shrink while their feet get bigger and bigger, and then they turn out to be frogs. I mean, it's a great science.
Okay, two real quick categories. Favorite animal, if it's a pet, other than a dog or cat.
I like hamsters. I raised them when I was a kid.
Okay, favorite animal, if it's wild in the jungle.
Gosh, I don't know. I can't separate that.
Okay, there you go,
they're
Katrina.
All cool. Okay, Tom in the Bronx, welcome to the program. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. I'd like to say this, that the concept of hell to me is of people. Look at volcanoes and other individuals would say, well, if you are a bad person, you'll wind up in hell, and you could see the volcano be surrounded by a lot of burning embers, and a lot of people, you know, probably very upset about that.
You think hell is here?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
That it was in the center of the earth. So people would say, well, I wouldn't want to go to the center of the earth and burn, you know, in hell, because that's where hell is. That's where the devil lives. That's how that obviously came about. In the other situation, you've heard, like, demons that get into people's bodies. Well, in Mexico, there's a town down there somewhere where not even the conquistadors had the nerve to walk into.
Why?
An Indian village, because these the individuals have had, unfortunately, they wound up with tapeworms. But these tapeworms are the breeder worms that, in other words, made their peace, like a deal with the devil. You've heard of the story, Deal with the Devil.
Wait a minute, I'm confused here. Tapeworms made a deal with the devil?
Well, in this sense of the word, that, in other words, that's the expression. But these tapeworms are breeder worms, and what they do is they don't kill their host. These people have...
Well, most creatures don't want to kill their hosts.
Well, in other words, but breeder worms don't do that. What they do is they throw off the egg.
You study breeder worms?
The eggs go into the bloodstream, and for instance, when somebody makes a salad or some food, it comes out through the fingernails into the food.
Yuck.
Then somebody eats the salad, which happened in New York City. There was two kids that were eating salad, and they wound up with the killer worms that eat the body.
That's horrible.
That happened in Manhattan somewhere.
That's gross.
I think it was Manhattan. But anyway, these worms live in the body. The breeder worms live in the body in this town in Mexico. And probably there's other parts of the world that have this too. And they keep the tapeworms alive because the tapeworms cannot breed. They don't have the ability to breed themselves.
All right, let me take another call because we've now learned everything we want to learn about tapeworms. Lisa's with us in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Lisa, we've got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
I just want to tell you that I totally get a chuckle when you say, geez, oh, my God.
Oh, that.
But I want to tell you about two incidents in particular.
You don't want to talk about tapeworms?
No.
All right.
But no, I've had these encounters, like, you know, since, you know, I was little, but one of them standing out the most starting when I was 18. But I want to tell you about one in particular, like when I first moved to Florida. Sometimes I almost feel like they're following me. Like one morning, and now this one occurred to me in morning, during the morning time, and I only know about the term shadow people because these things happened to me before the internet was even available. And so after the internet became available, that's when I started researching and trying to find out, like, what are these things that are, like, showing up in my bedroom. And when I moved to Florida, one morning I was sleeping on my back, and for some reason I guess I associated sleeping on my back with them appearing, but I fell asleep on my back, and I felt pressure on my chest, and I opened up my eyes, and it was literally like standing right there in front of me, like it was between like 5'11 and 6 feet tall.
But a shadowy looking creature, huh?
Right, but then, you know, it happened to me so many times that at this point, you know, I said, you know, I'm really tired of you guys bothering me, and so it was pushing me back down on my bed, but I was pushing up against it, and I was able to literally, like, stand up, and it was, like, standing right there with me face to face, and it was literally, like, swinging at me because I heard other stories about them saying whether they're benevolent or whether they're benign, but this one was really, like, trying to attack me.
Well, that happens. You got to be careful. You get these attacks. They're called night terrors, and there are these creatures that hang around in the night. Anyways, Ian Punnett filling in for us tomorrow, so make sure you're part of the program. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Badal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.